Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and J.J. Devaney.
Jimenez got it down. Jimenez Dos Santos and off the bar. It was coming from Mexico, and it's Jonathan Dos Santos who puts him in front.
Oh, no. No. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and J.J. Devaney. Wasn't supposed to go this way. The U.S. women won a World Cup final today. We were supposed to go to bed happy, so why am I feeling so down right now, J.J. Devaney?
Oh, I can only offer cliches. A tale of two halves. You gotta take your chances. Things like that.
Well, sometimes cliches exist for a reason.
Well, they both those cliches apply to tonight. It's also a quarter to midnight. We've had a long day.
What a day. And it has been actually a fun day.
Of course it has.
This was an amazing day for American soccer to have both the men and women playing in tournament finals. Of course, the World Cup being the more prominent of the two. But I think, we should say right now, for people tuning into this wondering when we're going to talk about that, we actually did a podcast devoted solely to the U.S. women out. We put that out earlier today. So look either in the ESPN FC feed or the Caught Offside feed, wherever you get your podcasts, you'll see it there. So we did a solid hour breaking down everything of that game and what this tournament has been for the U.S. women and what their legacy is that they leave behind. So on this podcast, you're not going to get much of that. You're going to get a postmortem of the U.S. men.
But can I just start by giving great credit to the American Outlaws who ventured south of the border for this game? Because, to get even that pocket of fans down there in such a hostile atmosphere was brilliant, and fair play to them.
I'm sorry, JJ. I think you're confused.
Why am I?
Yeah, that game was in Chicago, which is in Illinois, which is a state within the United States.
Good Lord. That was as partisan a crowd at Soldier Field.
How can this... this is not a new problem.
No.
And I didn't think we lead with this, but you know what? Let's just address it straight out of the gate, because honestly, it's one of the stories of the night that has to come out of this. It happens all the time when the U.S. plays Mexico in the Rose Bowl or in Texas, really anywhere except for Columbus. This is the case. But when is this going to change at least a little bit? I mean, it was 90-10 in there.
I got to give the Mexican fans credit first off before we talk about how it changes. Andrew, how are they getting their hands on tickets?
Right. They don't have special access.
No.
They just...
Same as anybody else.
I hate to say it, but... you talk about a show of cliches that we're doing right now. They just want it more. They just want the tickets more. They are waiting for the very second that they go on sale, and they are buying them and getting them.
Mexican fans are the fish fans of soccer.
It's a great, great comparison.
If fish turned up in your back garden within 10 seconds, the place would be full of 50,000 fish fans stinking the place up. Right? And Mexican fans are a much better smelling version of that. Mexican fans will be there. And you got to give them credit for that.
Absolutely. They are... I don't know. It's a problem with no solution. And this is the simple reality of playing them in this country. This is just the way it is.
We just have to get out and be more aggressive. If you're thinking about going to a Gold Cup game and you're not sure about the drive or can you bring the whole family, you just have to do it. Pull the trigger. Buy the tickets. Get to the game. Because if you don't, there is going to be a partisan crowd like we saw tonight.
It was honestly, it was unbelievable. But... Not when shocking.
When they scored, and we will get to the game, but when they scored, the roar, unbelievable.
Ugh. It's petty, and it makes me sound bitter and small, but I hate seeing it. I hate seeing it. It's embarrassing.
It makes sense that you hate seeing it.
Yeah. It's embarrassing. And I don't know, I don't blame American soccer fans. I don't know, I think it's more just about the rabid... fan culture of the Mexican fans in this country is unbelievable. And I don't really think there's a comparison anywhere else in the world, because is there another country that has that large of another country's fan base within its borders? Like, I don't think
it's a tough one. I don't think so.
Yeah. So it's just a uniquely American situation that you could get this to happen.
Now, there are other countries that tend to do that. English fans can do it in the club game. We've seen that. And in the international game, we've seen the Republic of Ireland go to Giant Stadium, and we were told it was going to be 60-40, and they flipped it.
Well, look.
But again, there's a good Irish diaspora in America,
right,
too.
This is a thing that really, it feels like, can almost only happen in the United States, because you have such massive populations.
Hey, look at Costa Rica at Red Bull Arena.
Yep. So. And they all love their soccer, don't they? Oh, they really do. I'm so happy for them, each and every one of them. Let's talk now about the game, JJ.
You're setting the tone here. You really are.
This is reason number one why the Women's World Cup should have been on its own day.
Oh, yeah. So you can't be depressed
right,
and sad.
It wasn't supposed to be this way.
This is a bipolar Andy.
We were both to the moon earlier today.
You were walking around saying how much you love. I love this team.
Well, I still do.
Every one of them. Unapologetic. And now you're just at the...
Well, no, it's not. My love of the U.S. women's team hasn't changed one bit.
No,
I'm
I never
just saying,
said
it's
your
just
mood has, though.
Yeah, that now you go to bed disappointed on a day where that wasn't supposed to be the case. Let's talk about the game and why it is that we're disappointed. Boy, was this frustrating. God, was this frustrating, because you just knew. We went into this game, I don't want to say knowing, but we were expecting Mexico to win. They're better than us right now in this sport. I don't care who wasn't playing for Mexico tonight. They're a better team than the United States are. Mm. That's a fact. And so for the U.S. to come out and play the way that they did, the U.S. belonged on that field tonight. They were in this game right until the end. And the fact that you can just look back on these singular moments, Jozy Altidore missing it's just like a must-score chance. You know, Christian Pulisic's chance was a little bit tougher, but he's in one-on-one with the keeper, and you kind of think, yeah, he should probably score there. Jordan Morris, header cleared off the line. 85th minute or whatever it was, Christian Roldan blasts one off the face of a Mexican defender. I mean, when it was all said and done, JJ, Mexico had 20 shots, the U.S. had 11. The U.S. come out of this game with a higher expected goals than Mexico.
But if you reflect on the first half, all right, Jonathan Dos Santos had a speculative shot early on that Stefan dealt with. But up until the Guardado chance that Areola got across and pressured him into slicing over the bar, it was all the United States. You know, you get out the traps, Pulisic. First of all, Altidore does something that we've been crying out for him to do forever, which is good hold-up play. Flicks it on. Pulisic is in behind. And it's a good save from Ochoa. You kind of speculated maybe Pulisic should have centred that ball again.
It's an easy thing to say when you watch the replay.
If that doesn't come off, you're saying that's too elaborate. Why don't you just slide it home?
You're right.
So it's a good save by Ochoa. And then there's the Altidore chance. Now, Mexico, for whatever reason, were really struggling with long balls in behind and balls of that nature. And Tim Ream just whacks a ball. And it totally catches them out. I think we were playing with the wind in the first half. That's certainly how it felt with the way the ball held up. And Altidore, brilliant turn, ties Moreno in knots. And Andrew, he's got to slide that to Altidore's left, to the right of the keeper. He's got to score. And he gets it under his feet and he drags it wide of the post. And you're just like, oh, that is such a big chance. And the US are playing really quite well at that point. And they're doing the things we want to see them do. They're a little bit direct to break the Mexican press. They're also pressing themselves, trying to close Mexico down. It was just such a good first half and a really heartening first half.
Yeah, I mean, those two chances, the Jozy hold up and then dish to Pulisic, who goes one-on-one, 5th minute. The Tim Ream pass that you just referenced to Jozy, 8th minute. I mean, they came out ready to play tonight.
But even the 19th minute, where they're building up on the left-hand side, Areola gets it to Bradley, and Bradley does what he's really excelling at in this team. We'll talk about what he's not excelling at later, but that ball, floated ball across to Reggie Cannon, the cross comes in and Mexico put it out for a corner. Yeah. It was a really nice flowing move, and you felt good. You felt really good.
And then even beyond that, I mean, so the U.S. are playing well, and it's not to say that Mexico looked bad, but then you've got moments where Mexico, 31st minute, the miscommunication between Moreno, Salcedo, Ochoa, where Paul Areola then sneaks in, gets possession, and it's not really his fault. It's a difficult angle, and he's got some players in front of him. But like, it just looked like Mexico were rattled. They were there for the taking, certainly at times in the first half, and the U.S. just couldn't capitalize. And you just knew. You knew watching each and every one of these chances, because the U.S., they're just not that team that's going to play a team of Mexico's quality and come out in the second half and win 3-0 going away. You always knew this is going to be close. This is, you know, like, that's just the way these games are when the U.S. beats Mexico. I mean, obviously you get your dos a ceros, but like, it's never going to be easy. And so to waste these opportunities, you just felt watching them in real time, you just knew it was going to come back to bite them, and it did.
Now, we need to talk about the tactical change that Tata Martino made in switching Pizarro from the left-hand side of the Mexican attack to the right-hand side, meaning he would be going at our left-back, Tim Ream. And Michael Bradley will be trying to slide across and cover that. Pizarro became much more of a feature at the start of that second half. He was much more involved. I know in the 58th minute, Morris had the header off the line from the corner kick. I get that. Guardado did really well there. But other than that, Andrew, the tide swung massively in favor of Mexico.
Well, some of it, like you say, is maybe tactical changes made by Mexico. And by the way, I thought Pizarro was phenomenal.
Second half in particular.
I thought he just played, certainly in the second half. But it just felt like he was on the ball, wreaking havoc constantly. It looks like they have a really good player in him. They have depth. They really do. And the U.S. lacks in that spot. But the thing for me, you're talking about Mexico's tactics. You know, I don't know if this is on Berhalter. I don't know if this is on just the players that he has before him. But to me, the game swung in the second half when, what was it? You had the U.S. were attacking, and then I'm trying to remember now. Mexico got the ball back, and Areola committed a bad foul. Guardado took the free kick and put the ball over the crossbar. And you thought, okay, bullet dodge.
Yeah.
But then the problem was the U.S. on the ensuing kick out from Stefan, let's play it out of the back. All right, let's bink, bink. Oh, turnover. Guardado again, fortunately, plays over it over the bar. All right, we're going to play it. Another bullet dodge there.
Don't do your bink.
Play it out of the back again. Bink, bunk, bunk. Oh, and another turnover.
Almost exactly in the same spot, by the way.
This happened time and time again from about the 55th minute to the 70th minute, and it just felt like the U.S., that was it. Like, any semblance of a hold that they had on this game in those moments where they decided we're going to play out of the back come hell or high water, it just felt like the whole thing came apart.
That was three times in and around the 57th minute. Can I ask you this? If in the first half, being a little bit more direct, winning your second balls and creating and playing in the Mexican half is working, why aren't you doing it in the second half? Why did at least one of those kickouts not go straight to Jozy Altidore, try and hold it up, win your second balls, play in their half? They were not comfortable all night under a well-directed diagonal or well-directed long ball. You're not Manchester City. Just because, again, and I'll say this about playing out from the back. Playing out from the back is a style of play, but it's also a decision-making process. If it doesn't work twice, don't do it a third time. Mexico could have ran in two goals there. You were laughing at Guardado. You were like, how many times is he going to shoot this over the bar before he gets one on target and we stop laughing?
Well, he never did, but Jonathan Dos Santos did. Yeah, it's like this weird give and take of, like, what have we always said about what this tournament meant for the U.S. men? It was never, I hate saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It wasn't really about winning this tournament. It was about progress. It was about signs that we have players that we can build around, that we're on the road back to respectability.
Method of playing.
But here's the deal. Like, okay, so I get that. So you want to play a certain way because you want to instill that style within these guys. But, all right, like, that's all fair. That's all fine and good. But you're here now. You're in the final, and it's 0-0, and you're in the second half. You know what? Like, your style, whatever point you've been trying to get across, I think you've gone and you've done that, and you can work more on it. Win the damn game now, all right? Like, all that other stuff that you're trying to do, that like to try to push this certain type of play on these guys, like, that's all. That's good. I respect it. That's great. You've got your convictions of belief on how you want to play, but win this game and then worry about that stuff later. You've been doing that throughout the tournament in training sessions, but you're here now. Like, just do what it takes to win this game and like, worry about that other stuff later. I don't know. Maybe that's weak-minded, but, like, you're this close to just, the morale-boosting wins of all morale-boosting wins for this team.
I don't think it's weak-minded. It's weak-minded if you could say in the first half, well, remember that passage of play where we kicked it, we worked it all the way from the back and we created X amount of chances from doing that. Let's do that again. That wasn't what they did. They were direct. They won their tackles. They passed. They played in the Mexican half. So just keep doing that. I don't understand. Now, I will say this. Again, there's this constant issue we come back to, and it hasn't been solved. And I don't think it will be solved, because I keep saying it's at the fundamental level. It's a technical level. 23% possession. Now, possession starts aren't everything. You can tell in the second half we had, you know, or rather by the end of the game, we had a much higher, not a much higher.
Well, the total possession for the game was 57-43.
Okay. The second half, yeah. 23%. We can't get our foot on the ball and pass it. That is just, it's that hasn't gone away.
That was Jurgen US.
That was Jurgen US.
Or really just
any US.
Yeah, not, a lot. That's not just a Jurgen thing.
And I get so frustrated because, again, people keep talking about that that's something a manager can come in and coach. The ability to be as comfortable as you need to be on the ball is something that happens at a younger age group. And if you're not doing that, then you certainly have to stop the kind of thing that was emanating from Zach Steffen's goal in that period in the second half. There was other issues as well. McKenney and Bradley, just as a tandem, didn't seem to work. McKenney on the goal was well behind the play. There was also that moment in the second half where you saw maybe a little bit of Bradley's age creeping on, or maybe just his legs.
I think we're starting to identify, not starting to, there's a lot of people who are screaming at their computers right now, writing a tweet to me, we've known this for years. Michael Bradley obviously has shortcomings, and I think they're becoming more glaring defensively. I still think he does a great job pushing play forward. I think that diagonal ball that you talk about, he's done it time and time again in this tournament, and it's effective. Led to a goal in, which definitely the Trinidad game, when he played it to Nick Lima, who hit it across goal to Zardes, I think it was. So, you know, he's still an effective player who should be playing for the U.S., but, yeah, he's... There are issues defensively, and we saw some of them.
The 66th minute when Jimenez just skipped by, and that was not good.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, look, Mexico are also very good. Like, Raul Jimenez is one of the... He does that to Premier League defenders week in, week out for Wolves. So, like, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was not a great game for Bradley.
Wasn't a great game for McKenney either, I don't
think. No, I thought it's unfortunate because McKenney was coming off what I thought was clearly his best game for the U.S. against Jamaica. He was phenomenal. He was so good in that game. And I wonder if him getting the captain's armband tonight was a little bit of a reward from Berhalter for that.
Well, he was certainly playing the captain's role in terms of getting stuck into Guardado and trying to keep him in his place. And, you know, there was...
Which you'd love to see.
They had that confrontation where I think it was Moreno got on the back of Altidore and was more than a little bit engaging in the dark arts there when he's gone straight through Altidore and then had a little kind of jump on him. McKenney straight in there involved. Yeah, that midfield, it didn't function. And also I think, you know, Berhalter was slow to make the changes when they started singling out Tim Ream, because it's not just about Michael Bradley as well. Tim Ream is, as anyone will tell you that's listened to this podcast, somebody who I keep going on about, he's a centre-back playing left-back, and he's not got a ton of pace, and he got exposed a little bit in that second half.
Yeah.
Especially when Pizarro moved on that side, you were constantly worried. And that's not a criticism of Tim Ream. That's just a fact. Berhalter didn't react very, very quickly to that. And also the question over when we're chasing the game, and I'm not saying Roldan didn't do well when he came in. He did fine.
Yeah, he did.
Why is Tyler Boyd now not in the mix
That's the one, if we're going to talk about the substitutions, that's the one that's probably most head-scratching
to
me. If he is, I don't think anyone's aware of that. I don't know. You take off Ream at the end, you're chasing the game, you're down a goal, and a like-for-like sub, bringing on another fullback in that situation, I don't know. I think at that point you kind of have to sell out. I would have thought that Tyler Boyd would have been the first guy off the bench, to be honest. I thought Jordan Morris would have gone off and Boyd would have come on, and that would have been pretty much a like-for-like sub, and you would have injected a little bit more pace from
creativity and
all
those things.
And we never saw it. And that was disappointing. That was straight up disappointing. I would have liked to have seen him.
Just roll the dice. But
ultimately, though, and we'll talk about bigger picture issues for the U.S. and what we've kind of learned from certain players in this tournament and where we stand in the second half of the podcast. But before we leave this portion of it, I do want to talk a little bit about the defense. There was a point in the first half, JJ, where I said to you that I'm thinking something, but I don't want to say it out loud.
Oh, boy.
Because I don't want to – I just don't want to, like, Joe Buck it. You know how Joe Buck will be like – every once in a while, he'll just say something like, you know, David Ortiz hasn't had a walk-off home run since June 1st. And, like, the next pitch, bang, David Ortiz gone, home run, Red Sox win. Like,
oh,
that was, like, the U.S. defense tonight, I thought, was really good. Like, I wasn't hearing Miazga or Long's names mentioned very much. And I feel like that's kind of a good sign when those guys aren't, you know, they're not being caught out. It seemed like every cross into the box, they were repelling.
Cannon did well on the right.
Well, you heard his name a lot for the opposite reason. He was fantastic. I mean, going on like these 40-yard runs, 60-yard runs, he was really impressive.
And in
tonight.
Fairness, in the first half, Ream cleaned up a lot.
Yeah. So overall, considering we came into this tournament really feeling uneasy about the defense, they took on their toughest challenge tonight in Mexico. And yes, we lost the game, and maybe the defending could have been better at moments in the second half. They were clearly on their heels. You know, the goal, honestly, the game like just ended. I have to go back and look at it again to see exactly who got it
wrong. Not much. It was a very well-worked goal.
Yeah, like I really think that this kind of like ramshackle defense, one game it's Zimmerman, one game it's Miazga, one game it's Lima, one game it's Cannon. Like, I really thought here at the end we got to a point where against their toughest competition, they really played well. I really thought that it was a good performance from those guys tonight.
I think so too. Largely what went wrong in front of them, not really any glaring errors with them in the back four. And if you want to analyze the goal, there's nothing really they can do there. They're being ran at. And you know, if you commit on the edge of the box, what can often happen. Maybe I would have liked to have seen someone try and close down, but Jimenez disguised the back heel very well. And the ball was even caught underneath Jonathan DeSantis' feet.
That was a great finish.
And he somehow picked it out and found it, a space to put it in beyond Stefan and in off the underside of the crossbar. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. We were worried, particularly going into tonight, to see how they'd shackle a Mexican attack that had Jimenez in it, and they did quite well.
They did. I certainly thought so. Some other thoughts on this. Here's Michael Bradley on the field right after the game. His thoughts on the loss.
We had some good chances. Obviously, you know that getting the first goal can go a long way towards winning the game. I thought we had a good start to the game. If anything, the beginning of the second half wasn't what it needed to be, and obviously, you know, they were able to get a little bit of momentum and they get their goal. Tough way to lose.
Yeah, here's Landon Donovan afterwards on Fox's postgame show talking about the frustration for the U.S.
These games come down to one special play, whether it's defensively, offensively. Mexico made a few plays, Ochoa with a few saves defensively, and then they scored the goal. Jonathan Dos Santos scored the goal that mattered. U.S. have no one to blame but themselves. They had the chances. They played as well as they played the entire tournament, but if you don't score, you're going to get punished.
I think he's right. I don't know. I was... The question was posed to me earlier. I was on ESPN Radio right after the game, and they said, who do you blame tonight? And so I kind of took a second to think about it because, you know, you go through the lightning rods. Is it Berhalter's fault? Is it Michael Bradley's fault? You know, is it Jozy Altidore's fault? And honestly, I mean, I hate to put it on just three people, but like the three lightning rods are kind of – they all were not their best tonight. Like, if they are the lightning rods, this is a full-fledged thunderstorm going on tonight.
And they are conducting a lot of electricity right
like,
now.
Like, again, Landon talked about right there. Sometimes it's a game like this, a cup final, like the chances are going to be few and far between against Mexico. And like, you're Jozy Altidore. This is your moment to score this goal against Mexico. And I hate to be so simplistic about it, but you just have to score there.
My friend John, who is a soccer fan, is a Jozy skeptic. and he texts me, tomorrow we're going to talk. And that means there's going to be a full rant about Josie. And you know what? It was such a great turn. Like, he put Moreno on spin cycle.
I know, he did the hard part.
He did the really hard part, and that is going to haunt him.
It's unfortunate, too, because overall, if I look at his, like, the total body of work, like, let's say the U.S., let's say Pulisic scores earlier on the hold-up play from Josie when he makes the nice pass as Pulisic streaking in and Christian goes in and scores that goal. And then let's say, you know, Jordan Morris's header isn't cleared off the line and he scores and the U.S. win 2-1. Okay, Josie missed that chance, but what are we sitting here right now saying about the game that he just had?
Thought he had a really good game in the first half in particular, held the ball up well, was underused in the second half, but I think it was a mistake to take him off when they did.
Yeah,
if you're gonna, just let me finish now.
Yeah.
If you're gonna get Zardes, what do you want Zardes to do? Probably run in behind. That means you're probably gonna play balls into the channels. We never did that. We never got the ball to Josie in the second half. People were saying, well, I haven't heard Altidore's name in a while. You never even tried to hit him with the ball. I don't know. It's catch 22. You bring Zardes on, you have to play a certain way. You bring Altidore on. Well, you're not already playing that way. You're taking him off. Not because, I don't think it was fitness. It was because he was underused. I don't know what.
I was going to say, Berhalter, he's got to know his players better than you and I. Josie's fitness has been a question all throughout this tournament. Maybe Greg saw something that, you know, you and I wouldn't necessarily see.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think fitness has to at least be part of it. I was wondering if this was a hymnal performance from Giassi Zardes and his substitution appearance.
No, it's more Josie Altidore, Josie Altidore, you've simply got to score. Amen.
Yes.
But it's the same hymns, though. I've hit on some crucial hymns again. Just like going to Mass, the same hymns. Can't keep the ball. Playing out from the back.
Josie. Christian Pulisic.
He's a wonderful player. He's the second coming.
I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break. I'm going to towel off. When we come back, we do have a lot more on this because this tournament... Like, I know right now our mind is where it is. It's in the gutter, quite frankly. Mind is in the gutter.
Where it permanently is.
Yeah, because we're just bummed about this. So we have to wonder, like, does this game now shade the way we feel about where this team actually is?
Oh, and we've got a great, great tweet on this.
Well, the U.S. just lost to Mexico in a hotly contested Cup final, so I'm sure U.S. Soccer Twitter is handling this with the utmost rationality.
Oh, and measured tweets.
It's my favorite fan base because of they care so much, and like sometimes when you care so much about a thing,
like, you lose sight.
Yeah, like somebody he's got this puppy dog and he just cares so much about it. I'm just gonna hug this dog and squeeze up, and his head just popped off. I squeezed him too tight. That's us with U.S. soccer. We care so much that we hug him and we squeeze him and we killed them.
And we criticize him for his tracking back the puppy.
So we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. It's very late, JJ. What a day. What an unbelievable day of soccer. We went to our buddy Peter Rosenberg. We went to his apartment to watch the women's final earlier today. Peter, of course, of Cheap Heat and the Michael Kay Show and Hot 97. So that was fun.
That was
and
nice.
And then we came back to the studio, watched the Copa America final, which was, in its own way, also fun.
Interesting.
There was, like, moments of controversy. Gabriel Jesus's roller coaster night where goal, assist, red card.
Moments of really good play.
Yeah. And like
opening goal was pretty good.
Yeah, and it was kind of fun with Peru... I don't know what I thought of Gabriel Jesus getting sent off. I thought that was a little bit harsh. But for the sake of my personal entertainment value, having 11-10 for Peru trying to chase that game in the last 20 minutes was interesting. So that was fun. We went out to dinner, you and I. Have we ever spent more consecutive hours with one another than what we've spent in this day?
Not in a very long time, if at all.
I think we're up over 13 hours right now, consecutively.
Pretty much not out of each other's sight except when we use the bathroom.
Yeah.
And even then. Scary.
I will say our dinner, I won't name the place.
Oh.
But they did not cover themselves in glory tonight.
We had a incident. Well, first of all, they left us sat for 20 minutes.
Yeah. How long is a normal amount of time before a waiter comes over and speaks to you?
How many waiters is normal to go by ignoring you? Different waiters. Not the same one. Different ones.
I want to, I demand, honestly, I think we should go back there right now and demand an explanation. How can this happen at a place that's well known and famous in New York City?
Yeah, you were, I mean, I was worried.
I thought I handled it very maturely.
At one point, I thought you'd make a scene, but you didn't.
That's not my style. I'm not a scene maker. Only once ever at Best Buy in college, I made a scene with the Geek Squad.
They weren't geeky enough?
No, their inability to do a thing in a promised allotment of time really, really hurt me. And I let, it's probably the only time I've gotten...
Bit of a tantrum.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of, because, well, whatever, no one cares. No one wants to hear about my problems. Let's talk, JJ, now more about this tournament. I guess we'll talk about some of the general takeaways. Look, we're disappointed tonight. There's no way around that. But here's the thing. Like, that disappointment comes from the right place, right? Like,
we lost a close-fought game.
Well, that's the thing. We're disappointed because we could have won this thing, which I think in itself is a sign that, okay, maybe things are actually moving in the right direction. Am I being too optimistic and feeling that way?
No. A sign that things are moving in the right direction. Is there anything you saw tonight in terms of positives that you haven't seen before from this US team? Was the type of positive different? Like, did you see, well, I've never seen us play like that before. I've never seen us do that before.
Well,
or are we just looking at the same positives we've always looked at? Pulisic slaloming through the Mexican defenders. Josie putting in a good shift. You know, working hard, doing okay. You know.
Well, here's what I'll say about Pulisic. For all the great things that he's done for the U.S., he hasn't played in a game quite like this yet. I know the Trinidad game is one thing. That is like a standalone game. I don't even know what category a game like that goes into.
No.
But this was a game with like all the hype and pomp and build up.
And a full crowd.
Yeah. U.S.-Mexico in a cup final. And I thought, like, I know Mexican fans, I saw somebody tweeted a comparison before the game of, like, every player, like, position-by-position comparisons, and he had the advantage going to every single Mexican player. I'm sorry. Like, Christian Pulisic, to me, is the best player on that field.
And they were petrified when he got on the ball.
Yeah.
In the first half. No, I will definitely say it. He was not on the ball enough in the second half. He was on the ball 30-odd times in the first half. And it was dramatically less than that in the second half. So that wasn't good. But again, I think that was more a systems failure. Here's what I'll say about this tournament and this game tonight as a whole. Do I occasionally see things that I know Bayerhalter's worked on the training field that I think are being executed well? Yes. Do I see things that I don't like that are being executed on the training field and are being tried to brought into a game? Yes. I do think we are a team that makes up for its deficiencies by working really hard and pressing really high. And when we win the ball back, we generally create chances in the opposition half. And I'll keep saying this until I'm blue in the face. That's the way we should play. But overall in this tournament, how much have we actually learned? How much improvement have we seen? I don't know if I can quantify it. I don't know if I've seen an awful lot.
Okay.
And I mean that, like, Guyana we should be beating. We should just be beating those guys anyway.
4-0.
Trinidad and Tobago.
6-0. Like that, 10-0 after your first two games, I don't care who the competition is, that it's you're doing the right things there, right? You're not convinced.
I'm not convinced.
They got to win 20-0.
I'm not convinced by the opposition against, I mean, we didn't play Panama's first team. We got a win. We didn't... Against Trinidad and Tobago in that second game, Andrew, again, there was that 15-minute patch where I don't know what Trinidad were doing, but I did like the way we played. So I'll take that as a positive out of it. Curaçao was a...
bad game.
Bad game. There's no two ways about that. Jamaica...
weird game.
Hard to figure that one out. Half-empty stadium, massive long break. That goal, how about that goal as my major positive from this tournament? That move was absolutely excellent and exactly what you'd want to see from a number of different areas and a nice pattern of play. But apart from that, it's a weird, fragmented tournament that was all building towards a game tonight. And if I'm going away from tonight, my takeaways are quite positive, but I'm not sure I've seen that much change. I'm not sure I've seen a Greg Berhalter. I've seen Greg Berhalter selections. I've seen things he tries to do. I'm not sure I've seen execution. I'm not sure this is anywhere near a finished product or a product.
Oh, no, you're right. 100%.
I think we are still very much in the embryonic stage.
Yeah.
And then let me stop myself then and think about what I'm saying and the words that are coming out of my mouth. Why wouldn't it be?
who thought that this...
It's June or July. But even as far on as we are, maybe I'm not looking for a finished product. What's not a finished product? What's something like in building, in progress, under construction? All those words. He started in January. You know...
This is his first tournament.
It's 7 months. It's just not long enough.
Of course. And like that was always going to be the case here. I'll speak to a couple things that I feel better about at this point than I maybe did beforehand.
Okay.
I know we didn't see much of him towards the end of the tournament, and his overall performance maybe tailed off a little bit. But I'm encouraged with the addition of Tyler Boyd to the pool.
I would concur with that.
I think that's important. We need more creative players. Like certain names, you know, Bobby Wood has just like disappeared. Like we need more attack-minded guys.
Guys who are comfortable on the ball.
Yeah. So he plays in a good ball. He plays in a good cross. We certainly saw that early in the tournament. So that's good. Looking specifically at tonight, you know, Reggie Cannon barely made this team. He's a really young player. I don't know what was expected of him. And then tonight on the biggest stage, he gives his best performance yet.
He was very good like, slotting in on the right-hand side.
Yeah. Like fullback is an area where I don't know ultimately what Tyler Adams' true position is going to be for this team.
But it should be center mid.
Yeah, and I think eventually we are going to get to that place. But, you know, so fullback is a position that for a while we've had some issues at. Like, we've relied on DeMarcus Beasley and, you know, Jorge Villafana, who's like, where's he now? And I don't know. Like, the more good players that we can find at those positions, that's important. So, you know, I would look at that as being another positive to come out of this tournament.
Can I be totally honest? And I've watched all the games. I've watched most of them with you. Mm-hmm. We've analyzed them. We've parsed through them. Is it okay that I don't know what the future holds? Like, people are asking, when are we going to be good? At what stage, like for Bradley was asked tonight, at what stage do you think this team is in winning back?
You want to hear his answer?
Yeah.
Bradley was asked about where the U.S. is at in their mission to get back on track.
Listen, we're in the stage of 5 minutes after losing a final, so we'll we'll stick together in this moment, and we'll leave the rest for in the days to come. Certainly. Proud of the group, proud of what we were about. Throughout the tournament, I think we continue to move forward. I think we continue to make progress. And, we just got to keep going.
I don't know that they've made progress. Now, this may be me suffering from shell shock from 2017's Gold Cup, where we won the Gold Cup. And I think people were generally buoyant moving on into the home game against Costa Rica. And just the harsh realities of World Cup qualifying against a season opponent kicked in and we were really roundly and soundly beaten in Red Bull Arena. Maybe that's where I'm at. I don't know what to make of Gold Cup. This is my third Gold Cup now. And I'm not sure. It's such a mix of talent levels. Even within your own squad, it's such a mix of opponent. I just don't know. And I don't have the takeaways that other people have. I do like the addition of Boyd. I don't like certain things that Berhalter persists with. But there are positives. I do feel that he can get something out of this team. I'm sounding very doom and gloom.
No, you're not. I think you're being fair. I don't know either. How can anyone come out of this tournament knowing where we're at in terms of road back to respectability?
It was good to have meaningful games. I will say that. It was good to have competitive games. This was certainly worthwhile. Tonight was extra worthwhile.
This was very fun.
I would play a million Panama B teams to get to a game like this. You know, that is a good quality opponent in a packed stadium, raucous partisan atmosphere. Unfortunately, not for us, even though it was Chicago. That was good.
It felt like a big game. It really did.
And it was. And the build into it, me and you were talking today straight after the women's game when we kind of had digested that. We were talking. We were saying how excited we were for this evening. That still stands. I actually enjoyed that game. I thought that was a good game tonight. And I'm sorry we came out on the wrong side of it. I just don't know how much to extrapolate going forward from this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of eyes are going to now shift to Berhalter specifically, because now we've got, you know, we had any number of friendlies under him, but what do any of those mean? Now his first tournament is in the books. You got a tweet.
Anthony.
Okay.
Minutes after the game ended. Mm-hmm. Sorry, but how can we still support this decision to go with Berhalter? Tata outcoached his beep today. Hashtag Berhalter done.
Oh. Look, I love that you listen to the show.
Now, he's misspelled Berhalter, which makes me...
Whatever. Only one G in Greg?
No, Berhalter, as in a halter.
Like a halter top?
H-A-U-L-T-E-R. Oh. Which makes me think that if you want to get rid of a manager, and yet he hasn't been in long enough where you've even learned his name, then maybe just let it go. Now, I don't want to make fun of this guy, because his opinion is valid.
Yeah, I love that he listens to the show, and I love that he cares enough to reach out and communicate.
But I think he's got an itchy trigger finger.
Well, look, so be mad about the substitutions tonight from Berhalter. Be mad about, you know, him deciding to play out of the back in a pivotal moment of the game. Those are all fair criticisms. But before we start talking about Berhalter out as a subject, A, it's insane. This is his first tournament. He's barely had any time to do anything with this team, so everybody calm down. B, he's missing several of his key players, Yedlin, Brooks, Tyler Adams among them. And C, look, first off, he's in the final, which is something for the U.S. to have gotten to a final in his first tournament in charge. But even more than that, fire Berhalter because Jordan Morris has a header cleared off the line, or Christian Roldan's potential equalizer late in the game smashes off a Mexican player's face, or Jozy Altidore, who should be playing. Berhalter didn't get it wrong to have Altidore starting, just shanks a shot wide. Or Christian Pulisic, your best player, your all-world star, goes one-on-one versus the keeper and Guillermo Ochoa makes a good save. So let's fire Berhalter. What is he supposed to do? He puts his guys in positions to make the right plays several times. I already told you earlier in this podcast, the U.S. had a higher expected goals ratio than Mexico tonight. Now, you can laugh off stats all you want, but that means something. All right? It means that the U.S. were not played out of the park. It means they belonged on that field with this Mexican team tonight.
Right.
So you're going to fire this manager after this? I almost feel ridiculous. Again, I don't mean to be coming down on him specifically, but I kind of feel ridiculous even entertaining that. Move on. We have to move on.
Well, let's move on, because Ian Harvey's moved on. He tweets us from Jacksonville, Florida. Mm-hmm. Can I just say, let's be happy we made it to the final. This is truly the most important game we've played since the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we held our own and had plenty of chances. Can't wait to see what this team can do going forward. And
I
think that is the tone. And thank you for all your tweets, because we've got lots of them. We can't get through all of them. A lot of them are about how we can fix the partisan crowd.
Oh, really? I actually would like to hear some of those suggestions.
Maybe you would.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Never mind.
Yeah. But anyways, you know, people are reactionary. I think Ian has struck a good tone. And honestly, people are just saying what they usually say at the end of a U.S. soccer game.
Anger,
yeah. The same old lightning rods, and reference to a country that plays better that we should aspire to be.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what I'm not angry about, JJ. Yep. Not angry about NetSuite. Here's the deal. If you don't know your numbers, then you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have is that it keeps them from knowing their numbers is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on and so forth. It's just a big, inefficient mess, takes up too much time, too many resources, and you know what that hurts? It hurts the bottom line. So here's the deal. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform, giving you the visibility and control that you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance, and accounting orders and HR instantly, right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. So here's the deal. Right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide. Free. That's right. 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/offside. This is free, people. That's netsuite.com/offside to download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits. netsuite.com/offside. No S on the end. People like to say offsides, but they be wrong. I do at least want to mention a little bit about Mexico, too. I mean, look, they just won this thing. We should probably talk about them. Look, from a soccer perspective, I can't stress that enough. I do not like them. I love how real this rivalry is. It is. You come from Europe. Does the world outside of this region recognize the U.S.-Mexico rivalry as being a real thing?
No. Some people know about it, but not that many. It would not be as universally well known as a Holland, Germany,
right,
France.
But being here now, you can see how real this rivalry is. These teams do not like each other, and these games are wars.
It's a real thing with a real history, and it gives this tournament life. It gives it a genuine life.
Many memorable moments in the histories between these two. And yeah, I mean, you know, I can't stand seeing them win it, but I'm glad that this was the final. This is always the game that I want to see at the end of this tournament.
Yeah, you always want it to build towards this because it's a genuine, you know, clash of the titans.
Props to them. They came into this tournament in a bit of turmoil. Tata Martino, I don't want to say had falling outs with, but like there are clearly issues with so many key players for Mexico. Carlos Vela is apparently not welcome back. I don't know what the situation is with Tecatito. Chicharito chose to sit this one out. Hector Herrera, the same thing. I mean, these are like, listen to these names that we're mentioning, and yet here Mexico are at the end of this thing hoisting the trophy. They have depth, and like Raul Jimenez has been around for a long time, but I feel like there's almost like a fine wine thing going on here with him where he is now establishing himself as the next great Mexican striker as maybe Chicharito's on his way out. Like I said, I can't say enough about what I saw from Pizarro tonight down the right side for Mexico. Edson Alvarez did not play a good game, but throughout this tournament, I think he's shown signs of why there's apparently European teams starting to bang on his door.
Dos Santos had a good game too.
He certainly did. So, you know, even in the face of all the adversity that they entered this tournament with, they showed their depth and they are deserving winners. Even though this game could have gone a different way, there's no question about that. In the second half, when it was, you know, when the game was truly reaching its crescendo, Mexico were clearly the better side. And yeah, they deserve to have now won this tournament for a 8th time. The U.S. 6 times we've won. This could have been the equalizer. Could have been 7-7 after tonight, but no.
And that Gold Cup represents the depth that this squad has. And when you look at that depth and you look at ours, it's not comparable.
Yep, not yet. Not yet. Because that's the thing. Is like I was already preparing my argument for if the U.S. had won, and then we were going to hear from Mexican fans, yeah, but we didn't have Chicharito.
Yeah, but
and
look,
I was all ready to say, yeah, but we didn't have Yedlin or Brooks or Adams. But it doesn't matter. Mexico, even without those players, they still go on and they win this thing. Maybe we're closing the gap. I don't know. But like, what was the gap? Because in World Cup qualifying, the U.S. played Mexico tough, at least the game in at the Azteca.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the U.S. obviously lost in the home leg, but
I think we need to close the door on 2015 to 2017. qualify.
No, you're right, but like that's for comparison's sake. I don't have much else to go off of. All right.
It's a new dawn. All right. Quite literally.
Well, so there you go. That is your Gold Cup. And now the summer continues. There is still things happening. MLS, hey, God love them. Through the Women's World Cup final this morning, through Copa America in the afternoon, through a Gold Cup final at night, MLS said, all of that be damned. We're still playing games today, people. We don't care. The MLS stops for no one.
It's quite incredible, really.
It's so funny.
Just ignore the rest of the soccer world and plow on. There must have been like 10 people at some of those games.
We have to have on. Does the MLS have like, do they have a director of scheduling? Like, I just want to talk to him and be like, so what goes into some of these decisions? Let's talk about it.
Well, what we make sure is that there's at least one team in the league that has played 15 games while everybody else right. has played 20.
Why have NYCFC played 3 games while Philadelphia have played 42? Explain it to us.
It's far too complicated for our feeble minds to understand.
It's so funny. So in the end, what are our takeaways from what was one of the most historic days of U.S. soccer's history, with the women winning a World Cup final on the same day that the men take part in a Gold Cup final against Mexico? This was an epic day of American soccer. It's unfortunate that we're going to bed a little bit disappointed, but don't lose sight of what the ultimate takeaways here are, that the U.S. women are still, no matter what we think the gap is between other countries and them, they are still the dominant force in this sport, and that is not going to be changing anytime soon. I truly believe that. And while you can feel however you want to feel about the U.S. losing this game tonight, ultimately I think you're going to wake up tomorrow, and I think there's going to be a larger part of you feeling good about the direction that this team is headed as opposed to feeling bad about it. At least that's what I'm going to tell myself tonight. You don't look convinced, but I'm not even talking to you anymore.
You're literally giving yourself a pep talk now.
This was a fun day.
I had fun.
At the end of a fun month.
I know. I just feel like I've ran out of things to say.
That's fair. I mean, we've done a lot of talking today. The podcast, of course, will continue. You talk about MLS. Nothing stopping MLS. Nothing stops Caught Offside.
Oh, yeah. We keep going.
We'll be back.
Regardless of everything.
I think Wednesday, the U.S. women have their parade down the Canyon of Heroes in Lower Manhattan on Wednesday. So we will probably do a wrap-up pod of that. A lot has happened in club football somewhat quietly. Transfer rumors are starting to kick into gear, which you know we love. So we'll be obviously talking about that. MLS will obviously dive back into. And I think this week, like, the dust will settle from both the U.S. women and the U.S. men. And I think this week you kind of will do a little bit post-mortem, a little bit more on, like, what we've learned. You know, we haven't heard Berhalter speak yet. I'm curious what he says about Tyler Boyd. By this time that you're listening to this, I'm sure more is known on that. But, you know, we'll get into all of that as the week goes on. So this train just keeps on rolling, JJ.
The football is officially going on forever.
Yep. People have been known to say that. Well, hey, this was fun, man. Honestly, I had a great time today watching all this. Congrats again to the U.S. women. I cannot stress that enough. Awesome. Really awesome performance. I love
that. That's the takeaway from today.
Yeah. World champs. Back-to-back world champs. It's beautiful. Hey, to you, I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.